Folks, you may have heard in the most recent legislative session, a bill is passed to eliminate three judgeships on the criminal district court for the parish of Orleans. And we spent a little time yesterday talking with Raphael Goyeneche about the possible implications of same. And joining us today is Jesse Manley, Interim Executive Director of Court Watch NOLA, the folks that spent a lot of time in the sections of court watching the operations. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So why don't we just start off this way, your reaction to this bill that passed?
Yeah, I think it's really disappointing. I think it's going to have a negative effect on the operation of the court and also just the, you know, the confidence that the people in the city have in the system. I'm really disappointed to see that it turned into a political action rather than something that was focused on efficiency or the operation of the court. We have fewer people to do the same amount of work. I think it's going to increase backlogs and it's going to take longer for crime victims to get justice and defendants who are waiting in jail to get their day in court.
You guys spend a lot of time in the courts watching. What is your appreciation for what you're seeing? Because when you look at some of the statistics as it relates to the throughput, the number of cases that are completed in less than a year and less than 18 months or less than 24 months, there seems to be a pretty wide delta between the courts. What are your observations relative to that and maybe why?
Yeah, so the way that we collect data, we don't necessarily see the case resolutions. We don't see it all the way through. So we have court watchers that are sitting there in court each day and counting things like continuances on the cases that we do see. So last year we saw about 3,000 cases. And so we did track continuances, and we've overall seen a reduction in the number of continuances. There is a variety of reasons why continuances happen, and our most recent report actually addressed some of this. The judges, I think, get most of the blame for continuances, and I think they do have a big part to play, but this is it's a wide system, and a lot of people contribute to continuances. So in the 3,000 cases that we saw, the judges were about 11%. Or 11% of the cases, the continuances were attributable to the judges, but also, you know, 10% were attributable to prosecution. Around 9% was the defense attorneys. The defendant not coming to court was a couple of percent. So the judges definitely have a role in it, but they're not the only people responsible. And it's a very complicated system. And, you know, there are a lot of things that could break down.
Do you find that there are some sections of court that have a disproportionate number of continuances as opposed to others?
Absolutely. So we saw that Section J had the highest number of continuances.
That was Judge Derbigny, who actually ended up resigning from the bench as a result of an investigation, right, as to his inability, his unwillingness to show up in court, right?
That is correct. He did step down. We saw that Judge Ziblich, who sat ad hoc, came in and made a lot of progress in chipping away at that backlog. We did see fewer continuances there in that section after Judge Durbany, after Judge Ziblich took over.
Yeah. Were there any other courts that you saw that had above average or more than the average in continuances?
Yeah. So the next highest that we saw was Section I, which was Judge Roche. Then there's a band where everybody is in around the same level. There are some that are exceptionally low. So Judge Davalier, Judge Campbell, Judge Burris had a noteworthy low number of continuances in the cases that we observed. But we do like to provide the caveat is that, you know, we don't see everything. We only see what our court watchers are in there for. So we saw 3,000 cases. That's a lot, but it's not the total number. So some of the judges structure their dockets a little bit differently. So we may, you know, have seen a judge that just did a lot of continuances on the day that we're in there because they had to reset for a trial and they had to move a bunch of cases down. So for the most part, you know, we had a couple that were on the low side and a couple that were on the high side. But there's a big band in the middle where everybody's around the same.
I hear from a lot of lawyers that if you go to that court on a Friday, you can shoot a shotgun through that court and not hit anybody. True or no?
I think that is definitely the lowest activity day. And there are,
It's okay. You can be brutally honest. I mean, this is part of the problem, right? I mean, you know, when you talk about the preservation of rights for victims and the preservation of rights for the criminal defendants themselves, I mean, this is a 5-day court, right? I mean,
it is.
We really can't afford to take a day out of the week and have nothing going on down there, can we?
I do think it is a little suspicious that that Friday is such a low activity day. I don't think that's true for every single court. So, right. You know, I would say on a typical Friday, we usually see, I would say, 8 or 9 of the twelve sections of CDC that are open. Magistrate court is always open, so they still do their two sessions on Friday. But you know, there are, I think, reasons why the judges set their dockets up that way. You know, trials are heavy on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then, you know, they leave space and the rest of it. So I'm not a judge, but
Jesse, isn't that the point? I mean, at some point in time, I'm not suggesting y'all, you know, you're a not-for-profit organization, trying to do good work in order to keep the public informed. But somebody ought to be monitoring what's actually happening here, right? I mean, my suspicion is that we're setting up our week around our lifestyle. Well, your lifestyle is supposed to be set around a 5-day work week. You know, just because you're an elected judge, you're not the center of any universe. You're expected to be at that court 5 days a week, minimum of 8 hours a day, I would hope. I mean, I served as a public servant. I was there every day. I mean, you know, took very little sick leave, was very rarely sick, you know, rarely missed work. I mean, I just felt that it was my obligation to be there. I mean, I get the sense, and this, I'm not in that court, I don't know, but I hear from attorneys every day, frustrated, you know, about continuances, the not showing up on time, the docket set for 9 o'clock and they come walking in at 10:45. It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree. The Friday issue is, you know, I'm not a judge. I can't speak to why they don't set up their dockets heavily on Friday. But you know, it's something that we could definitely look into. We are very, very concerned about, like you said, the number of continuances, like whether court starts on time. That's very important to public, to members of the public. You know, when there's a disparity in the power, like if you walk into court late as a defendant, the judge can throw you in jail. What happens if the judge shows up late? We know there are a lot of really good reasons why judges may not be able to start court at their scheduled time. They might be signing warrants. They might be taking important meetings. One of the things that we've continually encouraged judges to do is just to communicate with the public. We know that they do a lot of things behind the scenes that the public doesn't understand. And if they're forthcoming with the public, I think they'd be surprised at how forgiving people are. If you come out and you say, like, hey, I'm sorry, we're starting 20 minutes late today. I was signing a warrant. People get that. And they know it's not a sign of disrespect that, like, yeah, I just decided to roll in here. And so that's one of the things we've always asked for the judges to be, is just more transparent and more communicative with the public. The more people understand what judges do and the challenges they have, the more trust they're going to have in the system and the more satisfied they're going to be with the outcomes.
Yeah. You know, I work down there in that courthouse, so I have some experience with it. In my view, one of the greatest judges ever down there, Dennis Waldron, would walk into court every morning, take the bench at 8:30, and announce that he's there and announce who wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And yep. It was compelling, right?
The thing that I've always appreciated most about Judge Waldron is that when somebody appeared in his court, when they were subpoenaed, he would thank them for coming because he would say, I know you made a decision today. You could have not come. And I appreciate the fact that you showed up like I asked you to. And, you know, just that small measure of respect, I think, went so far to bridging the gap between that power imbalance. And, I saw the way that people responded when Judge Waldron did that. And, you know, I think it's something I would encourage all of the judges to really consider doing.
Absolutely. Even though it is their obligation, I get it. Mm-hmm. I think you and I are in the same position on this. I don't really like the way that this came down, right? And I don't think much of anybody does. I don't know that I can argue with the stats and whether or not there should be less. I mean, when I think about having, I remember in the 90s where we had the worst criminal violation years in the history of the city and the history of Jefferson Parish. I was working in JP at the time, but I always stayed current with what the crime picture was throughout the metropolitan area. The throughput in the 90s through that court system was absolutely incredible. And it needed to be because the challenges were great. But we had judges, Judge Frank Shea would have a judge trial and a jury trial going on at the same time. And, wheeling people in and out, making sure didn't give you a lot of continuances. We had Judge Al Ozer pre-tried everything. I mean, in advance, they knew. Have you contacted your witnesses? Are they going to be here? Because when we go, we're gone. There's no excuse come Tuesday of next week when this thing is set for trial. You know, and they'd be in his office Thursday. And he'd read them the Riot Act, where we were doing the things to make sure that we had the throughput. Again, when I talk to these lawyers today, I don't hear that. It's kind of catch as catch can, and some judges do it, some don't. But when you look at some of these wide disparities and you hear these anecdotal stories, for me, it's evidence that we're not clicking on all cylinders. And, I fault the bar. Everybody plays a role. And I agree with the way you summed that up to begin with. Everyone plays a role and everyone has to step up and do the right thing here. Otherwise, we have more crime victims, right? We have more.
Absolutely.
We have more degrading behavior in our communities. We struggle more. We're losing population. We need to gain population if we're going to survive. And it's so intrinsically linked to this system. It's scary when the system is not clicking on all cylinders. And I don't know about you,
I agree with you.
But let me ask you this question, because I've made this observation. I don't mean to monopolize this, but I haven't had many chances to speak with you. And I have a lot of respect for y'all's organization. How does a court allow a judge to, like Judge Durbingy, who basically didn't show up for almost a year to work? I can't square that up in my mind. I mean, if I were a peer judge, I would have had to have said something. I mean, you just can't have the violation of people's rights, happening like that to the degree of that without anybody saying anything. I mean, it was like mind-numbing to me.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to comment on, what I'm going to call like insider baseball there without me actually being in, the en banc. We definitely noticed that from where we can make observations that Section J was not as efficient as some of the other sections. Even that, I think is complicated. Like I have anecdotally heard that there are some reasons for why, not as many plea deals were offered in his section as other sections, which would have increased efficiency. So, things are hard to really, get a complete picture unless you have like whistleblowers who are you know, willing to come forward and talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff. But I know that, you know, many of the judges that I have talked to, you know, work really, really hard, and they're trying their best, and
thankfully,
they're listening to input from us and from, you know, MCC about things that we are seeing that they could do better and are trying to improve their efficiency and, you know, make it not only efficiency. It's one of the things I like to point out. We don't necessarily want the fastest system. We want the system that gets it right. And getting a case to trial and resolution is definitely an important part of justice for crime survivors and also defendants. You know, we think about people who are sitting in jail that couldn't make bond, that are waiting for their chance to win their freedom and get out of jail. But we also have to grapple with a history of like wrongful convictions in this city and, you know, just moving as fast as we can and saying like, well, sorry, your witness didn't show up, but, you know, like we're moving on is not necessarily how we get justice. There's a middle ground where we're taking all of the things that need to be considered into, you know, into the picture and then finding the right outcome. And so I think it is definitely fair to say that some of the things have not been as efficient, but we also don't want to be completely focused on just how fast it is, because that's how we send people to Angola that don't deserve to be there.
Well, I would humbly disagree with you on a number of different fronts, but that's an argument for another day. I mean, the reality is the burden is on the state, and the defense knows that the longer that they can string these cases out, the less likely that the list of witnesses that the state has on their witness list will show up. And, you know, time, the old adage of time kills all deals, well, time kills most cases. And, you know, and everybody knows it. And the game is played each and every day. The defense does not have to prove their innocence. The state has to prove their guilt. Mm-hmm. And so the balance of interest as to whether or not defense witnesses are there or not, whether it's a character witness or not, you know, there's a utility of these witnesses. And the fact of the matter is that when you set the rules in the court and everyone understands the expectations, you compel people to work twice as hard to meet that expectation because they know what the downstream implications are going to be. And as a lawyer, you don't want to get sued for malpractice if you're not putting in the effort to make sure that your witnesses are there. You end up engaging in covering the proverbial derriere and making sure that you make the contacts and everything else. But unless there's a compulsion or a judge that's going to compel certain human behavior to happen inside their court, guess what? You set low expectations. What do you get, Jesse?
you get poor results. I mean,
you get poor results.
I absolutely agree with you. But we're not talking about like inefficiency on both sides. I think both prosecution, like our public defender's office and the DA's office, are under resourced right now. And so we need improvement on both sides because both sides are contributing. Like when we look at our continuance data, they're within about 1% of each other as the number of continuances that are given to each side. And there's also about 5% that are joint continuances. So, you know, both of them need to do better, and the judges absolutely have a role in demanding better outcomes from them. But we're not seeing like that a huge disparity and like they're all coming from one side. We need better work from everyone.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's why I said it's not just the judges, the members of the bar, the Bar Association, the Supreme Court. In my view, everybody needs to wake up because historically, and I know that y'all recognize this, this system has underperformed for decades and is killing the community. Whether they're willing to stand up and say it, I'll say it because it's the truth. And unless we start acting like a system and we're not designing how we're going to conduct our court around our personal lifestyle, nothing's going to change. Nothing, literally nothing there. You know, and it's a shame. but there ought to be a standard that's set by somebody independent of the court that we can hold these individuals accountable to. Because it's just frustrating otherwise. As always, Jesse Manley, Interim Executive Director of Court Watch, NOLA, really appreciate your organization and appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for your time and your insight, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, thank you, Noel.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.